FM. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This is Karen Edwards for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Modern Maturity. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from mostly AARP, the Bulletin. I'm going to start with a couple of articles that we started last time. The first one is about health issues. Your most urgent health questions answered. And this is a recent issue of the Bulletin. I stopped smoking more than 20 years ago. All of a sudden, my doctors want me to get a lung scan. Why now? Recent science indicates your lung cancer risk, even as a long-ago smoker, may be higher than once thought. Since 2021, the U.S. Preventative Services Task Force has recommended screening for a wider range of former smokers, lowering both the age and the number of smokes that qualify individuals. There's a common misperception that if you already quit, you don't need to be screened for lung cancer, says pulmonologist Michael Wirt, MD, medical director of the Lung Cancer Screening Program at the Ohio State Wexner Medical Center. It's true that your risk for developing lung cancer drops every year from your quit date. But for former heavy smokers, even after 25 years, the odds of lung cancer remain three times as high as in never smokers, according to a study in the Journal of the National Cancer Institute. You should have an annual lung scan if you're 50 to 80 years old and a former or current smoker. If you have a 20-pack year smoking history, example, one pack per day for 20 years or two packs per day for 10 years. A low-dose CT, computed tomography scan, checks for abnormalities in your lungs. This is probably the easiest cancer screening technique that we have. There's no prep, and it takes just a few minutes, Wirt says. I've used sugar substitutes in my coffee for years, but there's been a lot of confusing news about them recently. Are sugar substitutes healthier than sugar or not? It's true that there's been some less-than-sweet news about sweeteners lately. Studies have linked the no- and low-calorie options to everything from heart attacks to gastrointestinal issues. In July, the World Health Organization named the artificial sweetener aspartame as a possible cause of cancer. The Food and Drug Administration, which approved that in the 70s, maintains that it and others like it are safe, so long as you're not overdoing them. According to the FDA, a person can consume 75 packets of aspartame each day and still be within the safe limits. So what's one to do? There's no doubt that cutting down on the amount of sugar you consume can be a boon for your health, but that doesn't mean simply swapping sweeteners for sugar, says Darius Mofasarian, MD, a cardiologist and professor of nutrition at the Friedman School of Nutrition Science at Tufts University. The real goal should be to wean yourself off sweet foods and drinks altogether. Think of sweeteners more as a bridge to better health rather than a destination. If you're going to have a 20-ounce soda, it's probably better to have a diet soda. But, you know, better to have neither, he says. Now, here's a sidebar supplement here. I hear a lot about adaptogens. What are they, and do I need them? Need? No. But adaptogens, herbs and other plants that have anti-stress benefits, have been shown to improve sleep and boost cognitive function, says Chris Damo, director of the Center for Integrative Medicine at the University of Maryland School of Medicine. These substances aid in your body's ability to adapt to stressors, he says. Still, talk to your doctor about any potential interactions between medications you're on and these supplements. Examples of adaptogens include ashwagandha, rhodanola, rosea, maca, chaga, and holy basil. Not exactly dietary staples. D'Amato cautions, take an adaptogen is not a replacement for core lifestyle habits. Next, everyone obsesses over getting 10,000 steps a day. Do I really need to hit that goal? When it comes to moving your body, more is better. But research published this year in the European Journal of Preventive Cardiology found walking just shy of 4,000 steps a day, 3,867 to be precise, or roughly 2 miles, can reduce your risk of dying from any cause. Researchers found that the risk of dying decreases the more you walk. An increase of 1,000 steps a day, that's about 10 minutes of walking, was associated with a 15% reduction in dying from any cause. An increase of 500 steps was linked to a 7% reduction in dying from cardiovascular disease. I think it's important for people to realize that they're not failing if they don't get to 10,000 steps, says Kieran Friel, an expert in physical activity and exercise behaviors at Northwell Health Institute of Health System Science. The average walking pace is about 20 minutes per mile, according to the CDC. So walking for about 40 minutes should get you close to 4,000 steps. Can't walk for that long? Pointing to the study's findings, Friel says walking 10 minutes more today than you did yesterday is a win. Next, antidepressants. I want to stop taking my antidepressant medicine. What should I do? Don't do anything until you talk to your prescribing doctor. Your body has become accustomed to the antidepressant. Quickly stopping will require an adjustment from your body that it's not ready for, says Lamont Moss, MD, a psychiatrist at Kaiser Permanente in Colorado. When this happens, symptoms can rush back. You may find it takes weeks to months to recover and get back to where you were before. If your doctor agrees that you no longer need the drug, they will help you decrease your dose gradually while watching for symptoms. It's a slow process, but if you do it with your provider, it can be done safely, Moss says. Now we have recreational use of marijuana became legal in my state, and several friends have started taking THC gummies. Are they really safer than smoking a joint? Smoking anything is bad for your lungs, said Peter Greenspoon, MD, a primary care physician and cannabis specialist at Massachusetts General Hospital. A cannabis-infused gummy may be safer if you get the dosage right. The effect from an edible can come on 1 to 2 hours after consumption, Greenspoon says. As a result, it's easy to overconsume the drug, resulting in consequences such as increased anxiety, palpitations, and fatigue. With smoking a joint, the effect is virtually instantaneous, and one can, after a minute or two, decide whether or not to take a second puff. So it is relatively easier to titrate to the correct dose, he explains. Also, keep in mind that you typically feel the effects of a joint for 2 to 4 hours, while gummies' effects can linger for 6 to 8. Speak to a medical professional educated in cannabis for help on finding your ideal dosing, and buy only from legally licensed dispensaries. The rule of thumb when ingesting edibles is to start low and go slow, Greenspoon advises. Next, we have dementia. Could relying too much on my smartphone for GPS, phone numbers, etc., be causing my recent decline in memory? Probably not, but some research indicates that smartphones can make older adults feel dumber because they flood us with numerous data sources, while our natural decline in cognitive flexibility, or the ability to multitask, makes processing all this data more difficult. Still, if you're concerned about your memory, speak to a doctor. Plenty of issues can toy with your memory, and many of them are fixable, including sleep issues and some medications. The earlier you can address your concerns, the more likely you can participate in your care and preserve your independence, says Joel Salinas, MD, clinical assistant professor of neurology and an expert on neurodegenerative diseases, dementia, and Alzheimer's at NYU Langone Health. Your doctor can ask a few questions about your recent habits and medicines and put you through a simple battery of tasks to get a handle on your brain health. For people 65 and older with Medicare Part B, this kind of cognitive health visit is covered every year. Even if you're younger, it's worth checking. The remedies to your brain lapses may be easy, and if you're dealing with the start of real memory problems, the sooner you know, the sooner you can take steps to support your brain health and your independence. And we'll just look at one or two more of these for today. Tick bites. Every few months, there's a warning about a new tick-borne disease. What do I really need to worry about? There are a number of scary and relatively new diseases caused by ticks, including alpha-gal syndrome, which causes an allergy to red meat, and Powassan virus, a rare but often severe neurological disease. But it's the classics, such as Lyme disease. The number of cases has roughly doubled since 2000, according to some sources, that you need to be aware of. Start with a trip to the doctor for a blood test. If you experience a rash or flu-like symptoms or are otherwise feeling crummy after a tick bite, if you have a picture of the tick that bit you for the actual tick in a well-sealed container, bring it along with you because that can help. Different ticks transmit different germs, says Thomas Mather, a tick expert and director of the University of Rhode Island's Center for Vector-Borne Diseases. So, you need to really be able to distinguish between ticks to know what kind of germ you might get. In some cases, your doctor may prescribe an antibiotic even before a diagnosis is confirmed, since early treatment is linked to better outcomes. And to remove a tick, use fine-tipped tweezers. Grab as close to the skin as possible and pull straight up rather than wiggling it out. Hormesis. My social media feed is filled with people taking ice baths, and several chirotherapy places have opened up near me. Sounds painful. Is it actually good for me? The ice bath trend has been covered everywhere from the Wall Street Journal to Shark Tank, and you can bet that if there's a trend, there will be entrepreneurs looking to make money from it. Major online retailers sell ice bathtubs for home use, and cold plunge spas are popping up in many cities. Although the benefits are still being researched, immersing yourself in cold water has been linked in some studies to everything from revving up one's immune system to activating metabolism and boosting moods. The concept is called hormesis, which is essentially that what doesn't kill you makes you stronger, says Mark Hyman, MD, an avid daily cold plunger and author of Young Forever, The Secrets to Living Your Longest, Healthiest Life. Stressing the body causes it to double down on self-healing. And you don't need to jump into a frozen lake, Hyman says. You can start by soaking in a bathtub for as little as 1 minute in water 60 degrees or cooler, or even by turning the dial down on the shower for a quick icy blast. Don't know about that. And finally, for today, for this section, breast cancer. My doctor told me I have dense breasts. Why haven't I heard of this before? Does this mean I'm at higher risk for breast cancer? You may not have heard the term dense breasts before, but it could soon become common thanks to a new FDA rule that will require mammogram facilities to inform women of their breast density. If you find out you have them, there's no need to panic, but you will want to discuss your breast cancer risks with your doctor. Here's why. Dense breast tissue, about half of the women over the age of 40 have it, can make it more difficult to detect cancer on a mammogram, says Terry A. King, MD, Chief of Breast Surgery at Dana-Farber Brigham Cancer Institute in Boston. In fact, traditional mammograms may miss up to half of cancers in dense breasts. women with what King calls extremely dense breasts are at increased risk for breast cancer, though scientists are not sure why, the CDC says. If your doctor says you have dense breasts, it's not something you'll be able to feel yourself. He or she may recommend additional imaging with an ultrasound or MRI at your routine breast cancer screening. There's not a one-size-fits-all approach when it comes to recommendations for additional imaging, King says. Although technological advances may change how breast cancer is screened for in the future. In clinical data gathered from 140 women with dense breasts, doctors using mammograms combined with 3D whole breast ultrasound tomography, a diagnostic technique that sends sound waves through the breast, found 20% more cancers than with mammograms alone. And remember, dense breast tissue is just one breast cancer risk on a list of several. Age, family history, physical inactivity, and alcohol use play a role as well. Knowing all your risk factors is a really important step forward for patients to be proactive in their breast health care, says Megan Colombo, MD, an associate professor in the Department of Breast Imaging at the University of Texas MD Anderson Cancer Center in Houston. Now, let's move on to another issue of the bulletin. For another article that we started last time, your 2024 money guide. And now we're going to look at get a raise without a raise. Don't miss out on job benefits that can save you money. Looking for an income lift, but don't see a salary bump in the near future? It's time to take a fresh look at your benefits package. In recent years, many employers have added financially fruitful perks that go well beyond the usual health insurance and 401k match. Among the popular new offerings is extra time off via policies that let workers use paid days off for caregiving, volunteering, and other purposes that in the past required taking vacation days. Unfortunately, many workers don't capitalize on all that's given to them. Employees are unaware of the full breadth of benefits and resources at their disposal, says Rachel McCann Jones, Global Diversity, Equity, and Inclusions Solutions Leader at Benefits Consultancy WTW. To see what your employer offers, schedule a meeting with your HR rep or take some time to scour your workplace internet. Here's a sampling of benefits that innovative companies offer. Reimbursement for home office costs. As remote work remains commonplace, nearly 6 in 10 employers subsidize work-from-home necessities, such as office supplies and internet service, contributing an average maximum of $857 a year, according to the Society for Human Resource Management, SHRM. Extra time with your family. With grandparents for grandternity leave and paid time off for family care, workers can receive compensation specifically for spending meaningful time with relatives. Now, menopause support services. Among organizations with 500 or more employees, 15% offer menopause benefits or plan to do so in 2024, according to benefits consulting firm Mercer. This includes access to specialists and medical coverage for symptoms. Then there's paid time off for community engagement, while at food banks, animal shelters, and even protest marches, workers can still earn their pay. Nearly 30% of employers grant paid time off for volunteering, and about 5% do so for protests or activism, SHRM reports. Access to personal advice. Nearly half of employers offer retirement planning or investment advice online, in a group setting or one-on-one. Almost 10% of large employers offer employer-paid legal services, according to Mercer. Typically, this includes help with legal documents, including leases, powers of attorney, and small claims court filings. Reduced commuter costs. Nearly 20% of large organizations offer employer-provided or subsidized transportation distinct from IRS-qualified flexible spending accounts for commuters. Cash for medical expenses. Of the 60% of employers that offer a health savings account, HSA, as part of a high-deductible health plan, nearly two-thirds contribute matching dollars to that account. Then, nearly half of employers offer retirement planning or investment advice online in a group setting or one-on-one. Pet-related perks. Nearly one in five employers offer pet insurance, according to SHRM. Some organizations, including 7% of large service industry employers, Mercer says, offer days off to care for a sick pet and paternity leave when you adopt. Along with these extras, many employers will subsidize your gym membership, says WTW's McCann Jones, and a growing number offer lifestyle spending accounts to fund physical, financial, emotional, or mental well-being through measures such as nutritional counseling and meditation apps. Also, a benefit for long-term care is one of the biggest areas of growth for benefits, McCann Jones says. That might include discounted long-term care insurance or long-term care as a rider to life insurance. Now let's look at a few more items under why did that get so expensive and how did that get so cheap? Health insurance. 30.3%. This is a statistic only an economist could love. The average workplace health plan premium rose 7% in 2023, says the nonprofit KFF. But the Bureau of Labor Statistics calculates this number differently. If the difference between what insurers are paid and what they pay in benefits is shrinking, it's as if you're getting more bang for your buck. So insurance prices are lower. We're not measuring the changes in your premiums, which I'm sure haven't gone down by 30.3%, says BLS economist Steve Reed. Eggs, minus 22.3%. As the avian flu ravaged the poultry industry in 2022, wholesale egg prices soared, reaching more than $5 a dozen in December 2022. Supply levels have since recovered, says Phil Limpert, an analyst in the food and retail industry. Smartphones, down 14%. Average selling prices are up, says IDC, Worldwide Device Trackers, but the BLS collects prices after deals are factored in. And phones are one of the many items for which it deems improvements as a price reduction. So, if this year's phone has a sharper screen than last year's, the BLS might compute a price decline even if you paid more. And finally, utility-piped gas services, down 10.4%. Last winter's mild weather meant low demand for natural gas used for heating, and the U.S. increased natural gas production in 2023, making high domestic storage levels even higher, says Chris Higginbotham of the U.S. Energy Information Administration. The result? Falling prices. Now, let's take a quick look at one of the unsung heroes of the civil rights movement. Along with legendary champions, thousands have sacrificed during the era of change. Here are a few of their stories, and we'll start with one today. Martin Luther King Jr., Rosa Parks, Medgar Evers, John Lewis. These names ring through history as leaders of the vast, sprawling events that constituted the civil rights movement, in which African Americans struggled for equality during the 50s, 60s, and beyond. But the movement could not have succeeded without thousands of people of all races making important, if not overlooked, contributions, and without millions of people moved by their efforts, deciding it was time to do the right thing. For Black History Month, we went in search of those men and women who did their part to change the history of America. Without seeking fame or reward, simply because they saw the need to become part of the solution. Here is one of their stories. Willie Pearl Mackey King on the Birmingham jail letter. 82, living in Montgomery County, Maryland, King worked from 1962 to 66 as a member of Martin Luther King Jr.'s executive staff. Where I lived in Atlanta in 1962, the landlady rented her extra bedrooms to college students and working young ladies. Dorothy Cotton lived on the first floor. Cotton is known as a pillar of the civil rights movement. One day she asked if I was looking for work. I had never worked in an office. Dorothy gave me an address and said, "You should go here and apply." That is how I got hired at the Southern Christian Leadership Conference. They put me at the reception desk, and I started reading brochures about this place where I was working. I had never heard of civil rights before. Then one day, this gentleman came in and greeted me, asking me about my church and my family. I realized that this was the man in the brochures. He was in charge of the Southern Christian Leadership Conference, and his name was Martin Luther King, Jr. Dr. King asked me if I would go with him on certain trips. I was elated. In December of 62, I went with Dr. King to Birmingham to organize a people-to-people tour of the state of Alabama. We visited towns all over the state, and this is how the Birmingham movement got started. This was to be nonviolent protest in the heart of Jim Crow. The FBI told Dr. King, "There are incredible threats against your life. We cannot guarantee your safety." Well, Dr. King called us together. He said, "If you decide you don't want to go on this trip, that it's too dangerous, I will not be offended, because we could be killed." I looked around thinking we'd be canceled, but no one else said no. I went off and did my crying and then came back and said, "I'm going." On Good Friday in 1962, after the protests in Birmingham began, Dr. King was arrested. A group of eight ministers wrote an article, a call to unity, saying Dr. King was an outsider and urging locals not to participate in what he was doing. Dr. King decided that he was going to write an answer. He was in jail, and he asked the jailers for pen and paper. They said, "You're not in the library. You don't get anything to write with." He wrote on the edges of newspaper, on toilet paper, on sandwich bags. His attorney, Clarence Joan, hid the scraps under his suit jacket and slipped them out of the jail. We had to put together this jigsaw puzzle. We were on the floor trying to figure it out, scotch taping things together. Dr. King's handwriting was not the best. The lighting was terrible in his jail cell. Well, folks, we have run out of time for today's episode of Modern Maturity. Be sure and listen at the same time next week. I hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Karen Edwards, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Modern Maturity is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.